Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Makes starting the program a whole lot easier. Being able to hear yourself. Yes, indeed. This program is live. Of course, it always is. I'm the progressive broadcast host who takes no vacation. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's the 18th day of July, 2017. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's where you go if you'd like to participate in the chat room and be part of the Madcap Merry Multimedia Zany Wacky real-time extravaganza that is the conversation that takes place during the 3 hours in which the program is live every Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Just click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in. And you will be immediately greeted, I promise you, they'll greet you, by Anatole and Laborman and Lizardo and VT Blom. And you will, of course, be moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has declined to fold space today into the heart of the sun, because that's what I presume the man cave feels like, the heart of sun. For once, I did the Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid part early. So we've got that out of the way, which is cool. Yeah, Sparky tells me it's only 92 degrees where he is today, which is down from the triple digits he's been seeing, but still nothing that you would want to fold space into. Here at the mansion, here inside the studio, it's only 84 degrees. It's downright tolerable. It's been a beautiful day. I got out and about early this morning. I got to hang out with a member of the Horn Family Community Congregation, Ron from the not so frozen north, has made a pilgrimage back down to his hillbilly roots. So I'll say good evening this evening, assuming that they're listening. Say good evening to Ron and Kelly. Ron had a hankering to get around to golf in, and I had a hankering to at least get around a golf course if I couldn't play golf. Golf is presently verboten to me. Something about the twisting motion of swinging a golf club that can cause one's uninsured spleen to go pop. And after that, well, not so good. So Ron played golf, and I sort of played at caddy. There was a cart, so you know, neither of us were hiking. That was a beautiful day on the golf course. We got out there early enough. It wasn't oppressively hot. Got around the track pretty doggone quick. And I can happily report that Ron's a pretty decent golfer. Hit some beautiful drives. He hit one approach shot that was just perfect. got on in regulation, and it was a gorgeous morning and early afternoon. And thanks very kindly to Ron for the camaraderie and the company. Enjoyed the heck out of it. That's the thing about a golf course—you talk about everything. And good conversation all morning into the afternoon. A little bit of wildlife to be viewed out there at the course. The greenskeeper was back over behind the tree with a walkie-talkie. He said, "Cue the deer," and the deer came bounding beautifully out across the fairway. Little spiky antlers working their way up. And so I am I'm presently back home. Sister Carol Baker says, if anyone's hankering for some fried eggs, food porn already on this Titanic Tuesday, the 18th of July. If anyone's hankering for some fried eggs, we're cooking them on the sidewalk here in Kansas City. Let's see, Thursday, 100 degrees, Friday, 100 degrees, Saturday, 100 degrees. This would not be a good time to be hanging out on the Spanish Plaza, I'm guessing. And, you know, do you reckon there's a correlation between the rise in temperature and, say, crime going up? I was thinking about the other day because I think about a lot of weird stuff when I'm in the car by myself. As I was driving home from D.C., I was thinking about, you know, maybe part of the reason for the fractious sectionalism in our history has to do with the fact that a portion of our country was living in a place that was far too hot and really shouldn't have, the South. No, I think that was slavery that caused the problems. As our buddy Burns Lawler pointed out many, many years ago, it's not the heat, it's the stupidity. This is, of course, a listener-supported broadcast operation. You knew I would get around to that. I couldn't help it. We have to. That's how we stay on the air here. I can happily report that Chris and Germany's challenge was met last night shortly after the program went off the air, thanks to everybody who made that happen. And what I think we can do here is, thanks to our subscribers, let's put it this way. I expect 275 was what I worked out ciphering the other day. But thanks to our subscribers, we can knock that down to 235. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. $235 fundraising goal for this evening as we move toward the end of July. $235, one at 235, and after that, you know, we're into an odd number and it becomes a real pain in the ass. But that's what we'll try to raise this evening, $235. And move toward the, end of July, and get all the bills taken care of, and have another month of the human-made miracle that is independent broadcasting, independent progressive broadcasting. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. If you would like to become a monthly subscriber, all you have to do is click the little button that says Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation, and boom, you're in. You're part of the we happy few who take care of some of the fundraising automatically, making life a lot simpler for me and cutting down on this kind of talking. If not, just put a number in and click send. If you prefer the U.S. Postal Service, well, the way you help out that way, and some do, folks like Brock and Terrace and our longtime dear friend Brandon in Brooklyn, Well, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318 Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, WV 25801. Okay, and if you'll let me know in advance, I can tell Boss Man Lane there'll be something in the mailbox. He can leave the spider-proof gloves in the truck, and all he'll have to take with him is a nice, say, 3.5-foot section of rebar in case he winds up meeting the Grand Dragon of the local clan chapter picking up their mail at the same UPS store where we pick up ours. Okay, so 235 is what we're hoping to knock down this evening. If we do, we do. If we don't, we'll hope for something, the prayer meeting Wednesday miracle, but 235 would be nice. Where to start? Well, it seems to me that the logical place to start is the healthcare discussion. Not to toot my own horn entirely too much, but on the one hand, you know, the chinless Mitch has come out and said, "Well, we just don't have the votes right now to bring freedom back to America." On the other hand, however, there's the other thing that he's about to do. And for this, you know, I can only say, you know, gosh, I give all the credit in the world to the tattered, threadbare, purple robe with the frayed appliqué moon and stars and the glow-in-the-dark paint across the front that says, "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby?" And the magic eight ball with the cracked screen on the bottom that always reads, "Answer hazy, ask again later." Because lo and behold, guess what? The next in the great American healthcare debate is just a plain old-fashioned outright repeal of the Affordable Care Act, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, which the White Wing persists in referring to as Obamacare, as long as they think anybody's not listening, and if they think nobody's listening at all, they just use that word that they prefer to use, right? Because economic anxiety. So the Senate is actually going to hold a vote on whether or not to flat out repeal the Affordable Care Act. Because that is what the Marmalade Mugabe told them to do via Twitter. They get their marching orders. I mean, Welcome to America 2017 version. They get their marching orders, the Republicans do, via Twitter now. I've heard about this really creepy thing, and it's uncertain as to whether it's real or not real. But there are some grieving parents of dead children who think it's real. An internet game called Blue Whale. Have you heard about this? Social phenomenon. And again, don't know if it's real or not, but apparently some kids think it's real enough. You get this list of things to do that involves stuff like cutting yourself, and then you have to send photos for proof. And then after you've gone through the entire list, the last message you get is kill yourself. I don't know if it's necessarily, I don't know if it's spread on Twitter, Facebook, I'm not sure how. You can probably learn more about it by looking up Blue Whale. But these kids get their marching orders through social media. Well, if you're a Republican member of Congress, and why would you be if you've got a functioning brain and a relatively active conscience. But if you're a Republican member of Congress, and this is so embarrassing, I mean, this is so servile, this is so toe-sucking, this is so lick-spittle. If you're a Republican member of Congress, you have to get up every morning and run your white little ass over to your electronic device and check Twitter to see if you've received any orders from Comrade Kumquat that morning. Well, today, they got some orders. By the way, I neglected to mention the fact that this is Titanic. This is Titanic Tuesday, which means, of course, that we celebrate today acts of Titanic intellect, right-wing Titanic intellect. You know, of the full steam ahead, flank speed into the onrushing into the iceberg variety. It goes all the way back years and years and years ago. Jim called in last night. It was Jim who first heard the origins of Titanic Tuesday on White Wing Radio over in Beckley, America's fifth smallest radio market, and promptly reported them here, too. Yeah, when the right-wing monotone over there, Steve, who in the annals of great monotones, Steve must surely be near the apex. He was reading the newspaper to his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers one day, and when he took a break to answer a call and probably save the lives of several people who were somewhere near narcolepsy and about to crash their cars into telephone poles and things and plunge off ravines, what have you. But he took a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing faithful who said, "Steve, how come it is you reckon that there is seashells in the rocks that you can see in the rocks in West Virginia? I done see them myself. There's ferns and seashells and all kind of stuff. I done see them down in the mines. How come is that? How come you no got no tattoo?" To which Steve replied, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Titanic plates. And thus was born the idea of Titanic Tuesday. Mm-hmm. And sadly, still no word on the whereabouts of the Titanic gnocchi shaper. A lot of stuff on that Titanic table. So we celebrate Titanic intellect on days like this. And it was this morning when the Titanic intellects of the White Wing had to run lickety split to see what kind of orders they had received from the Clementine Caligula. And there it was, from some 20 hours back, 10:17 p.m. last night. "Republicans should just repeal failing Obamacare now and work on a new health care plan that will start from a clean slate. Dems will join in." It was just last night the fact that I was talking about, mentioning that we have Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer to thank for the fact that no Dems are joining in, nor should they. the godforsaken, soulless, motherless, brainless, heartless, thoughtless Republicans need to own this for themselves. They want to take health care away from millions of people. Do it all by yourself, because we're not going to stand there and say, and we helped. No, sorry. Republicans should just repeal failing Obamacare now and work on a new health care plan that will start from a clean slate. Dems will join in. Oh, he is... All I can tell you is that Marcus Aurelius is spending a lot of time these days listening to the singing of the spirochete choir slithering around betwixt his ears. Not a lot of brain material left. It's almost all spirochete now. Dems will join in. But that's what Chinless Mitch is going to do now. Really. He's going to bring on... And the reason I'm kind of patting myself on the back here is because I've said it was going to come to this all along. They're going to bring on a... They're going to bring on a bill that just repeals the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, and doesn't just throw 23 million people out of their health care, throws everybody out of their health care. Goodbye, pre-existing condition ban. Goodbye, kids can stay on their parents' insurance plans. Goodbye to all of that. Mitch McConnell's going to try to bring us some real freedom, so that we won't have to have our liberty, sit, liberty, sit, so that we won't have to have our liberty compromised by being able to go to the doctor when we're sick and thereby be reduced to the sad little commies that people who are able to go to the doctor when they're sick obviously become. They're going to vote on this. He swears up and down they are. And if he can get 50 Republicans plus one, well, party on, Wayne. Party on, Garth. And then it would go over to the House of Representatives. And the House of Representatives... Well, the Freedom Caucus would positively wet themselves in joyous celebration of a bill like that. And the question is, how about the last two remaining Republican members of the House of Representatives who aren't birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, and, you know, Trumpansies? How would they respond? Now, the oh-so-smart folks in the for-profit media are saying, well, you know, McConnell's not even going to be able to pass this bill in the Senate. And so, you know, they won't get health care done, and it's time for them to move on to tax reform. They need to move on to tax reform. And that's one that... You know, last week when I was sitting down to dinner, or after we had sat down to dinner with Reverbo and his lovely significant other, as we walked and talked, we walked down Massachusetts Avenue away from the lovely little German restaurant. And I said, y'all may not realize it, but we are about to walk past the epicenter of everything, or almost everything,
that is wrong with the United States of America? To which Reverbo said, what? Really? Yes. I don't just say things. Well, where is it? Over to our left was the Union Pub, where once, back when we had a little apartment in D.C., Ferg and I went for some wings. And as we waited for our wings, a rat the size of a beaver ran under our table. At which point I said, boy, I don't know about you, but I'm not feeling so hungry for wings now. Me neither, Dad. But so there was the Union Pub, and there was the little place where we used to go and get a fresh baguette every morning and slather it with some butter and some bitter orange marmalade. Gone are the days. The terrible pizza place that I went in once and never went into again. And then right there, on our right, I said, behold, because they're so proud of it, they put the name of the place up on the building. And there was an audible little, because there it's the Heritage Foundation. And yes, it is the source of almost everything that is wrong with this country. The Heritage Foundation is the sort of constitutional chop shop whereby our social infrastructure has been reduced and eradicated over the years. And I mention all of this because outfits like the Heritage Foundation, the Cato Institute, the American Enterprise Institute, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, et cetera, ad nauseum, those are the insurgencies, the extremely well-funded, don't forget the National Rifle Association, America's most well-funded, politically connected domestic terror organization. These are the organizations that generate the thinking that leads to disasters for working and poor people in this country. And so, I'm sure, burning the midnight oil somewhere on the fourth or fifth floor of the Heritage Foundation, some eager little twit scion of a right-wing family is laboring away, trying to figure out a way to convince America's atne ute aitbre, if you one what I in me, irking way ass clay. To hop up and down and clap when the Republicans move to take health care away from everybody in this country, which is apparently what they plan to do. Yeah, as Clarity notes, the Heritage Foundation, our heritage of short shrifting the unfortunates who are not born to plenitude. Well, that's true, Barkway. Alec, too, Barkway says. Alec, too, Bob, the American Legislative Exchange Council. But they don't really have a great, big, gaudy, massively expensive building sitting right there, a scant couple of hundred yards from the capital of the United States. The Heritage Foundation does. But that's where we're headed. We're going to have a vote. And organizations like the Heritage Foundation will lean hard on Republican lawmakers. For instance, my junior senator, Shelley Moore Capito, daughter of Archmore, the single most corrupt individual ever to be involved with government in the history of the state of West Virginia. I mean, he was on his way out the door as governor, and he was shaking down the coal companies. And yeah, you just leave it there. Leave it there in a brown paper bag marked lunch, and I'll know you did the right thing. But your Alex and your Heritage Foundations will crank up the heat on my junior senator Shelley Moore Capito, who was referred to this morning by Joe on that program, my dirty little morning habit watching that program, as Shelley Moore Caputo. Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh well. They'll crank up the heat on her. No, she won't vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act. You just wait and see. Lisa Murkowski says, she won't vote to repeal the Affordable Care Act in total. Just you wait and see. Because, see, here's the deal. If we were to have Sherman set the Wayback Machine for 2015, we would find that Shelley Moore Capito and Lisa Murkowski and John McCain and Lindsey Graham, yes, right down there, Lindsey Graham, just rising up off the fainting couch down there at the ancestral estate of Smolder and Chode. And Lamar Alexander and Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, the man who forgot to become an American for a really long time. And Bob Corker and, frankly, every member of the Republic, and, you know, chinless Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head. Well, back in 2015, they all got together. Every last Republican in the whole new United States Senate. And they voted together and they said, we are going to repeal this communist Obamacare, and we are going to unshackle America from its Kenyan Muslim usurper chains. Every Republican member of the United States Senate voted for a bill identical to what Chinless Mitch is about to bring to the floor of the Senate to be voted upon now. And yet some of the senators who voted for that then are saying they won't vote for it now. And, you know, why is that? Could it be that they're just a bunch of filthy hypocrites who knew that new Americans were becoming more and more fond of the Affordable Care Act, but they knew that it would play really well to their mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking base if they put, we're right here. We're here today. We're going to vote to get rid of that Kenyan Muslim usurper care and give America freedom back again. Liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. Going to give them back freedom so that they can be free enough to die when they get sick instead of having to give up their freedom and climb into that welfare hammock and go to the doctor in their hammock. That's what we're going to do that. Yeah, I know. Isn't that cute? It's just adorable, isn't it? Because, see, here's the thing. Back 2 years ago in 2015, and Lordy, oh my goodness, didn't the birchers and the birthers and deathers and ninthers and tenthers and baggers and birchers and booger eaters and the little nascent trumpansies, didn't they just, oh, they just hopped up and down, oh, and they hooted and they hollered because they was so proud of those Republicans for voting to free us from the shackles of being able to go to the doctor, because they did that. But then again, back then, the Kenyan Muslim usurper was still in the office. He was waiting there, right there at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, and he had his left-handed fountain pen ready. And they knew, every goddamn Republican in Washington, D.C. knew that when they passed that bill, all they had to do was pass it and send it down. He'd just go, well, screw you, veto. And they knew they didn't have the two-thirds majority necessary to override a veto and turn it into law. But they also knew that they could then go back home to their weird little wingnut districts and their weird little wingnut states, their Stan states, their Confederate states, you know, Talabama, Talibandiana, Mississippi Stan, Georgia Stan, Tennessee Stan, South Carolina Stan, North Carolina Stan, Virginia Stan. Well, wait, they've got Democrats. West Virginia Stan, Arkansas Stan, Missouri Stan, and say, well, we tried to free you from that Kenyan Muslim usurper's deadly Kenyan Muslim usurping clutches, but he stopped us again. But we're never going to quit trying until you're free enough to be able to die of preventable illness, because we Republicans, unlike the Kenyan Muslim usurper, we love America, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, in the universe, forever, amen, under God. Exceptional. And this they then did. And then dark money groups ran ads in 2016 talking about how good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual representative Horace Thumbbutt had proudly voted to repeal Obamacare. And the mouth walkers and the knuckle breathers ate it up, and they ran. They did not walk. They did not crawl. They ran to the polls to return representing Horace Thumbbutt to the House of Representatives, where he could continue to protect us from Kenyan Muslim usurpations. But it was all just a cynical kind of theater. Everybody knew that vote was symbolic. It was going nowhere. Well, now, however, it ain't so symbolic anymore. Now, what they do with their majority is very, very real. And so now that it's not just racist theater, well, now suddenly Shelley Moore Capito, she's not so sure she wants to take away the Kenyan Muslim usurper care from a whole bunch of West Virginians who rather badly need it. Because after all, she's the junior senator from a state that the southern half of which is daily poisoned. Little bitty hillbillies get poisoned. Babies in the womb get poisoned. Mommy hillbillies get poisoned. Daddy hillbillies get poisoned. Grandma and grandpa hillbillies get poisoned. There's poison all over the place. And, you know, Shelley won't say out loud that she knows that to be true, but she does. She's part of a family that's been trading off of poisoned hillbillies for generations. And she's kind of... I reckon you could say that she's acting like she's lost her nerve. But I'm not convinced. Because there's all kinds of dark money out there, and I expect any minute now to, if I turn on the radio here, that right-wing talk radio station over in Beckley, I'll hear an ad. Call Shelley Moore and tell her you're tired of living under Kenyan, Muslim, Negro, you slurper tyranny. Tell her to vote with Mitch McConnell and stand with liberty and take away your health care. And you know what? Once those ads start running, the preachers will start preaching it in the pulpits too. Give it a couple of Sundays. And then we will be off to the races. In short, we are not out of the woods on this. Not by a long shot. There is still trouble in River City. And we're a mite shy of a Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening, coming at 17 minutes before the end of the first hour of the program. And the walls may damned well fall too. And by God, if you see Mitch McConnell coming to you with his arms wide, you can bet he's about reached behind his back for some sort of godforsaken disappearing ray gun. Ray gun. Reagan. Get it? Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Clarity says, until there are no woods, we won't be out of them with this new crop of neocons. Not at all. And then let's go past the fact that I was absolutely right that eventually they would get around to just passing a repeal bill. Now bear in mind that the repeal will not affect their health care, the finest socialized medicine health care that the people of the United States operating to form that more perfect union can provide. No, hell no. No. But the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini has told us which way this is going to go. We're just going to let Obamacare die. Obamacare is failing. Obamacare is dying. We're just going to let it die. And then the Democrats will have to figure out something, you know, because the Republicans can't. I mean, look, let's not kid ourselves. There's an answer to all of this. The Affordable Care Act is not and never was a manifestation of anything resembling legislative perfection. But the grown-ups recognize that one, in a political process, one must be careful not to let the perfect be the enemy of the good. As it was drafted and as it was passed, the Affordable Care Act represented a bold step toward total coverage, healthcare-wise, for every American. There are still Americans who are without health care. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm an uninsured American. I and my spleen would, and the chunk of my pancreas that needs to come off, would like to have insurance. But having learned that it's $250,000 ice cold cash on the barrel head, to have that done, well, let's just put it this way. It's not going to be done. But the messaging has begun. Obamacare is failing. It's failing. Obamacare is failing. Failing Obamacare. And so we're just going to let it die. Well, how fucking compassionate of you there, Tiny. Yeah. I mean, really, what kind of an answer is that? Because he said that. Yeah, I won't subject you to the audio, but he said that.
Man, we're just going to let it collapse.
Because, as Sister Carol Baker points out, Obamacare isn't dying. It's being murdered. The Orange Fuhrer is standing on the oxygen hose asking Congress to pull the plug, you know, humanely. As I drove home this afternoon from my non-golf outing, I was listening to National Petroleum Radio, who now takes ads from LifeLock. No kidding. How much longer is it before I tune in NPR and I hear All Things Considered is provided with a generous contribution from, oh, I don't know, buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold now. Gold is your best hedge against inflation. Buy high and sell low because you're a sucker. Buy gold now, and we'll provide you with a free month's supply of Super Beats. Because you're too goddamn stupid to realize that you can go and buy beets in a jar or in a can, and you can even buy them raw and cook them yourself. Super Beats, for people too busy and stupid to eat food. Superbeats.com. No, but I on National Petroleum Radio, I heard they were interviewing the insurance commissioner, and she sounded like she wasn't particularly comfortable, but she was the insurance commissioner from the Tennistan. And whoever was interviewing her said, but complete repeal of the Affordable Care Act would make things even worse than they are now in the insurance market in Tennessee, wouldn't they? Well, I oh, shit, I'm going to get a nasty note from Lamar Alexander on this. God damn it. Bob Corker will take me right off the Christmas list. Well, I suppose they might be. That was a big admission from somebody in one of the Confederate states. That no Obamacare at all is worse than Obamacare. Painful. Painful to admit. But along the way, she mentioned, and you know, the subsidies for July have not even been paid yet. Because the government provides the subsidies that shore up the insurance company's ability to, because profit, you know, because capitalism. But the actuarial types and the accounting types the people who know how money works and how markets work and how health insurance works and insurance generally and business, they have said unequivocally that, no, Obamacare is not dying and it's not going to die unless somebody puts a pillow over its face and smothers it. Which is what Donald J. Trump now intends to do. To withhold, and how he's going to do this, because it's not, if you read the language of the law, it's not language that says the president may. It's not language that says the government may provide. Shall. Is gonna. Ain't got no choice. So if he takes affirmative steps to withhold the subsidies that prop up the you want to talk about something that's failing? Capitalist-based health insurance is failing. But if he withholds the subsidies or tries to withhold the corporate welfare that props up the exchange and the marketplace and the insurance companies participating therein, he's going to be in violation of the law, isn't he? I submit to you that he will. But that's where we're going. He's going to try to strangle tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, of American citizens. And in so doing, try to muscle the Democratic leadership in the House and the Senate into caving in and working with Republicans to come up with, because look, this is where I was headed a couple of minutes ago. There is an improvement to the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. There most decidedly is. But the improvement to the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act is not to monkey around with the subsidy schedules. It's not to leave this in but take that out. There's a reason that every time the Republicans come up with a plan and send it over to the CBO, the CBO comes back and says, well, you know, you're going to knock 23 million people out of their health care. Ah, you're going to knock 25 million people out of their health care. Because remember how I mentioned the Heritage Foundation a little bit ago? Remember when Bob Dole was running for president in 1996? Remember how Bill Clinton spent his early political capital trying to reform health care and letting Mrs. Clinton do it? Yeah, I do too. Well, the Republican answer to the Clinton health care plan was what we now know as the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, which also eventually became Massachusetts Romney Care. Although, of course, by the time he ran for president, Bishop Willard Romney had never heard of it before and had disavowed it. And I think maybe while I was busy taking confession one day, somebody fake forged my signature on a healthcare bill in Massachusetts. I don't know. But this is about as capitalist a plan as you can get. You give billions of dollars of free money to the insurance industry in exchange for the insurance industry graciously agreeing to provide coverage to American citizens who don't have health insurance, with Medicaid to pick up the tab for people who can't afford and are 138% or lower of the poverty rate, can't afford health care and fall within that. You understand. And again, if John Roberts, he of that dead-eyed stare, had not declared constitutionally that it was unconstitutional for the federal government to force the states to take oodles and oodles and oodles and oodles of free money. I mean, talk about a moment in Supreme Court history. The reasoning behind that one is a real Lulu. But this is about as capitalist driven a healthcare system as there is. Well, Jesus, Clarity, I'm sorry. Just when I was hoping incompetence and self-centered, self-interested special interests in a circular firing squad, you bring out your Little Miss Sunshine Pisses on the Floral Arrangements Act. Well, that's me, Bob Kincaid, little ray of sunshine. You want to feel happy about stuff? Tune in the cat program or the dog's barking podcast. I'm sorry, all I got here for you is reality. Hillbilly reality. Here in Appalachia, we've been on the short end of the stick for an awful long damn time, and we are disinclined to tell people that that spoonful of shit they've got is really ice cream. But there was an iota of truth, a tiny seed of it, in what the Clementine Caligula said. There is something better, he said, and we're going to have a plan that's going to provide better coverage, cheaper, for more people. And if that silly bastard actually knew what he was saying, he'd know that he actually spoke something. I know, it's amazing that lightning bolts just don't fly out of the sky when he does it, out of sheer surprise. He actually spoke something resembling the truth. There is something out there that provides more coverage for more people, better coverage for less money. You know it and I know it. And we know what it's called. It's called Medicare for All. It's called Universal Single-Payer Healthcare. It's called what England has, what Canada has. Neither of whose systems are, by the way, perfect. But if you will ask, if you'll just stop your local friendly neighborhood systems engineer on the street someday and say, "Hey, bub, tell me about that perfect system." I'm guessing your friendly neighborhood systems engineer will look at you and say, "No such animal. Everything's going to have a bug. Everything's going to have a flaw. What you're working toward is having as few of those as possible." The fewer moving parts, the better off you are. What is one of the single most efficient healthcare delivery systems in the world? Why, it's Medicare. Low overhead, low administrative costs, no advertising dollars. No 40 million dollar Christmas bonuses to pay for CEOs to go out and buy 24 karat gold urinals or umbrella stands or shower curtains. No 50th birthday parties in the Mediterranean to support. Just a program that lets people go to the doctor when they're sick, or get bad organs removed safely from their bodies when that moment arrives. No stupid questions about how much do you make or when. No dumbass questions about how old are you or how young. No inquiries as to whether or not you've got a house or you live in a cardboard box over a sewer grate. No picking and choosing. You're just covered. You're born, you get a card, you're covered. Oh, Mark of the Beast, Jesus Christ. But it's there. Now, what do you think it would take for, say, Granny Starvin' Paul Ryan and Chinless Mitch to ever get a, let a bill like that get to the floor of their respective houses for a vote? Stand by, please. So there's the question. And I think the answer is never in a million years would Paul Ryan or Chinless Mitch let a bill like that come to the floor. So, you know, we know what the answer is. Everybody knows what the answer is. Because the answer is that obvious. But we also know that it ain't gonna happen as long as those two white men maintain their death grip on the legislative process in this country, which means you've kind of got some waiting to do. Yeah, going all the way back to the 2012 election, remember those 47% of Americans who are just takers that Bishop Willard was talking about? Clarity asks, revenge on 25 million people? Damn Skippy. Punish a few of them with death. Because they know that taking health care away from people winds up in people dying. Health care insurance, health insurance, they know that it makes people die. But, you know, they're statistical deaths. They're not deaths that really matter. And, you know, they don't have any names attached to them just right now. So you can't say that Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell are actually trying to kill anybody in particular. There's just a Ryan McConnell lottery out there that's going to have 10,000 or so, 12,000, maybe 14, 15, 20,000, who knows, names drawn out of it. Goodbye. It's almost like that Star Trek episode where people just walk into a box because they're at war with the other planet and the computer has declared that a certain number of statistical people have to go. See you now. It's been nice. So here we are at the close of the filibobster, 5 minutes past the hour on this Titanic Tuesday, the 18th day of July, 2017. We call what we do here Conversation Radio. And that involves you and me, us, talking. If you would like to engage in said conversation, there are a number of ways of reaching the program. The first is, of course, the Stress Line, named for the inimitable, irrepressible Bill Mr. Stress Miller. 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. H-O-R-N. On the virtual keypad on your device. The other number, of course, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. Doesn't spell anything at all. And from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. You can reach me on Twitter, at Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D. You can find me on Facebook, Bob Kincaid. And you're welcome to join in. Email always rolls into bobkincaid@gmail.com. Got a note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. You would think, subject line, after all these years of looking around the world at all the different types of single-payer systems, you would think that all the super geniuses, I like the sound of that, in the U.S. government would have figured out a damn near perfect system. The problem is, you can't line the pockets of your cronies by providing the proletariat with health care. No, for that you need something like, say, the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. It's going to apparently cost $1 trillion to deploy. Hoo-wee, Uncle Jed. Yeah, there's really no good money in helping people. It's just, you know, the right thing to do. And when's the last time you ever caught a Republican engaged in that? Hint? Maybe 150 years ago? Yeah. So, conversation radio for this Titanic Tuesday. The lines are open. Let's get the conversation part started. After a little break, I'm Sunshiny Little Bob Kincaid, and I'll be back. This is The Horn.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long stem rose. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that you love me, baby. Everybody knows that you really do. Everybody knows that you've been faithful. I give or take a night or two. Everybody knows you've been discreet. There were so many people you just had to meet without your clothes. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. it's now or never. Everybody knows that it's me or you. And everybody knows that you live forever. When you've done a line or two, everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe still picking cotton for your ribbons and bow. And everybody knows. And everybody knows that the plague is coming. Everybody knows that it's moving fast. Everybody knows that the naked man and woman are just a shining artifact of the past. Everybody knows the scene is dead, but there's gonna be a meter on your bed that will disclose what everybody knows. And everybody knows that you're in trouble. Everybody knows what you've been through. From the bloody cross on top of Calvary to the beach in Malibu. Everybody knows it's coming upon. Take one last look at this sacred heart before it blows. And everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that's how it goes.
Tuesday, July 18, 2017.
This happened so quickly, the crews had no opportunity to really fight the fire.
Raging wildfires in British Columbia forced nearly 40,000 to evacuate. Trump administration reduces royalty payments on offshore drilling. Energy Department's electric grid study contradicts claims by the Energy Secretary. Plus,
clean air, clean water, clean soil, that's where we get our food. It is what we live from.
Catholic nuns build outdoor chapel to block natural gas pipeline.
They're having none of it. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We have nearly 100 years worth of natural gas and more than 250 years worth of clean, beautiful coal.
And several million years of actually clean, actually beautiful sunshine, which you would know, Mr. President, if you looked up every now and again from your meetings with the fossil fuel industry. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I don't know that this could possibly be a good omen, but I see that Tropical Storm Dawn is now forming in the Atlantic Ocean.
Yes, it is.
That can't be good.
The National Hurricane Center announced Monday that Tropical Storm Dawn has formed in the Atlantic Ocean. It's not Donald, but Dawn. Hurricane names for the 2017 season were set way back in 2006, so it's only a coincidence that the name is similar to the current occupant of the White House.
That won't keep him from going after the National Weather Service, however, if Tropical Storm Dawn becomes Hurricane Dawn and wipes out the East Coast.
Well, that seems unlikely. The Hurricane Center says so far, Tropical Storm Dawn is small and not particularly well organized.
They didn't really say that, did they?
Yes, they did.
Oh, man. What else do you have for us today that is less ironic?
In Canada.
All gone. Yeah, it's all gone, eh?
Just 1 year after catastrophic wildfires destroyed much of the town of Fort McMurray in Alberta's tar sands region, now next door in British Columbia, more than 36,000 people were evacuated on Sunday to escape wildfires driven by heat and high winds that have already destroyed an as-yet unknown number of homes in and around southern British Columbia. There are now 160 active wildfires in British Columbia alone right now, and wildfires over in Alberta have closed parts of Banff and Kootenay National Parks. Officials are warning it's shaping up to be yet another record wildfire season.
And yet they continue to dig that dirty tar sands oil out of Alberta?
Yes, they do.
And it will soon be heading to the U.S. via the Keystone XL pipeline?
Yes, it will.
Fantastic.
Bloomberg News has obtained a leaked draft of an electric grid reliability study that concludes that the rise of renewable energy does not undermine the reliability of our electric grid. It directly contradicts Energy Secretary Rick Perry, who ordered this study to question whether clean energy policies are unfairly pushing out polluting coal plants. The draft, written by Department of Energy staff, concludes renewables pose no threat and, quote, the power system is even more reliable today. The question now is how much of that draft will survive changes made by political appointees.
They can still change it before it gets released, but thanks to Bloomberg, we now know what the actual scientists think.
The Interior Department announced its first offshore oil and gas lease sale, opening up more than 70 million acres in the Gulf of Mexico for offshore drilling. And to sweeten the deal, the Trump administration reduced royalty rates paid by oil and gas companies for fossil fuels extracted from the public's holdings, claiming that reduced royalty rates are needed to encourage drilling at a time of low oil prices and help developers get a better return on their investment.
And help screw over the American taxpayer.
But some good news. In the House of Representatives, 46 Republicans bucked their leadership last week and joined with Democrats to defeat an anti-science amendment to the annual defense authorization bill. It would have barred the Defense Department from reporting on the impacts of climate change on military facilities.
So that is not barred. The military can still report on the menace of the climate crisis.
Indeed.
Good.
Thanks to Republicans.
Thank you, Republicans.
Finally, in Pennsylvania, an order of Catholic nuns has built an outdoor chapel to block a natural gas pipeline across their land, saying the pipeline is a violation of their long and deeply held religious beliefs and reverence for creation. Pipeline company Williams is suing to use eminent domain to seize land owned by the Sisters of the Adorers of the Blood of Christ to use for the Atlantic Sunrise Pipeline in order to export fracked natural gas overseas. In an interview with the broadcast, local Mennonite pastor Melinda Clatterbuck, a co-founder of the group Lancaster Against Pipelines, which has joined the nuns, said they will block them as long as they can.
If they gain that land possession, the community of believers are going to be in that chapel prayerfully protesting when Williams tries to take it over.
You go, ladies. I want to see the Trump administration take down those nuns in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Then I saw her face. Now I'm a believer.
Yeah, nice bumper that. I'm a believer, the Monkees. 20 minutes past the hour, and thanks to go out to Glenn and to Larry for helping to take down the fundraising just a skosh. Thank you very kindly. So we are down to $220 to go for fundraising this evening, which makes the ciphering a little easier. You know, that's one at 220, two at 110, four at 55, eight at 2250, 16 at 11 and a quarter, that kind of thing. Let's run over and check in with Scott and his handler, Punky, in San Diego, in the fabulous new digs with the hardwood floors. Hey, Scott.
Yes, indeed. The other day, the cat was sprawled out in front of the front door trying to catch a breeze. looking dead to the world. I mean, to the casual viewer. And it was hot enough. I almost stripped down to my Cat in the Hat BVDs and got down there with her, you know, but I didn't. But luckily, I thought better of it because that would be just the moment that the welcome wagon lady would show up. Or maybe it would be just the moment.
You're shopping for an off-brand Roomba, are you?
Oh, yeah. I don't know about that. I'm telling you, I had no idea those things were so expensive. Some of the souped-up ones.
Scott, hardwood yes. floor, broom, dustpan.
I know, but I...
Exercise.
That gets a little tiresome. See, now, don't be knocking a Roomba-like a device, Bob, because there where you are on Bob's Little Acre with the old dirt floors, you would have no floor at all.
How did you know?
I'm just kidding with you.
No, we just dry the floor out with a hair dryer. Shovel a little layer off the top and a nice shiny new slick dirt floor.
There you go. All natural. Plus all the minerals that you would want if you drop food on the floor and don't pick it up within, 5 seconds?
Yeah, hint, the 5-second rule does not apply to dirt floors.
No, probably not. I wouldn't think so. But actually, that can't be terribly bad for you because look at the many thousands and eons, years worth of ancestors that we had. And what is that old saying that my great-great-aunt used to say? Everybody eats a peck of dirt in a lifetime. I'm not sure how much a peck is, but...
It's a lot.
Is it bigger than a bushel? Because I've heard bushel and a peck.
I think it... Well, okay, so there's our first research question of the evening. Bushel
these
and
units,
pecks.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's just... I think it's a fortnight less than a farthing. okay. There's 4 pecks to the bushel.
Oh.
A peck is a 2-gallon or 8 dry quart or 16 dry pint unit of dry volume. 4 pecks make a bushel. However, 2 pecks make a kenning.
A kenning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they couldn't work that one into the lyric. I mean, bushel and a peck and a hug around the neck. Okay, bushel and a kenning. Something's just going to come out dirty.
Yeah, at least. I was sitting here contemplating as I was listening to you today.
Oh, wait. Time out. A bushel okay. and a kenning, you'll get so tired of winning.
There you go. And boy, am I tired. Good Lord. It's almost 6 months. And if we get any more winning, Bob, and I say winning in air quotes, if we get any more of this nonstop winning, I'm not going to be able to stand it. They're going to have to send an attendant to come see about me.
Well, that's more than understandable. So... but you were saying, you were listening to the program, and then I interrupted you.
Yeah, you were talking about, you know, what has brought us to this state in terms of why we just can't do the sensible thing when it comes to healthcare. And a good bit of the problem has to do with enrichment of cronies by the Republican Party. That was pretty much the gist of what you were talking about. How did we manage... before we lost our collective minds, at least on that side of the aisle. I'm not particularly old, but I remember a time when we actually got things done. And I think it was Hartman a couple of years ago was talking about people in business and industry, not too terribly long ago, within my lifetime, the head person in a large company made X number, X times the amount of their highest paid worker.
Right. And it was maybe 237 times.
Yeah, which is not a, it's in looking, comparing it with today's mega salaries of these people in the upper echelons of business, that seems minuscule compared to
and yet the fact that CEO pay has skyrocketed as it has, Scott, comes with a caveat.
Mm-hmm.
That is a largely American phenomenon. There are other countries where the CEO does not make 10,000 times what the lowest paid worker makes.
You mean like we used to do it here?
Right.
Yeah.
It's a function of, see, what happens when you deregulate, the only way capitalism can ever come close to working is if it has some reasonable regulations on it to keep it from consuming itself.
Yeah.
Because capitalism as an economic scheme is essentially suicidal. Everything devolves toward monopoly, and then everything collapses.
Yeah.
And back in the day, we had some regulations, and you remember when Ronnie Reagan said, "Hey, the most dangerous words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help."
Oh yes, I remember that. That was like the beginning our current nightmare.
Bingo. I mean, just about everything just about every modern problem that we face in this country starts with the ascension of old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan.
The devil, you say?
I do.
Yes, but you're right. You're absolutely right. The vast majority of all of our troubles today have their root and foundation in his elevation to high office. But just to ask one question about the way it used to be in terms of sensible corporate salaries for the head person in charge, there was nothing written in terms of the law that required owners and business operators to do that. As far as I remember, I mean, it was
not,
just the nature.
Not directly, no. Indirectly, yeah, I mean, yes, because the shareholders wouldn't put up with it, or the bank examiners. Don't you think you're paying Mr. Drysdale a little too much there? I mean, this is a bank; it's not a printing press. Yeah, that kind of thing.
No. But on some level, you've got to figure that wiser heads knew going in that there was something inherently wrong with conducting a business that way and paying as little as you possibly could to workers while the fat cats were on easy street,
so to speak. But I offer another caveat, Scott.
Yeah, okay.
That what you're talking about is a mid-20th century phenomenon. Say from FDR forward, from FDR to Reagan, because of course for the J. Paul Gettys and the John D. Rockefellers and the Andrew Carnegies and that bunch, they saw the predatory acquisition of wealth as something that was not only good and acceptable, but actually mandated by Almighty God as proof of their status as the elect.
I know Rockefeller did. Rockefeller certainly did.
And, you know, Andrew Carnegie started endowing libraries when he began to feel the sulfurous flames of hell licking at his heels.
Well, yeah, that can serve as an inspiration to even the most jaded individual, I can imagine. I've never had that problem in terms of having vast wealth. So I'm not over. If a prerequisite for going to hell has to do with vast wealth and being mean to other people. I can thankfully say I don't think I've got that problem. You know?
Yeah.
But it's hey, did you ever see the movie The Smartest Guys in the Room, the Enron documentary?
Oh yeah, yeah, I've seen that. But you still you still haven't seen The Big Lebowski.
You know, I've got it on my queue. It's on HBO and I think one of the services, either Netflix or Amazon. And I was going to look at it over the weekend, but I got to puttering. See, that's something that you run into in a new place.
You have to putter.
There's a shitload of puttering to do.
Well, if you were to ask Ron from the far frozen north, he would tell you that he was not fond of his puttering today.
Oh yeah, on the golf course. What does he shoot typically?
I'd say he brings it in under. I'd say typically he brings it in under bogey golf, but and today it was largely that way. There was just one blow up hole. If he calls in, I'll leave it to him to describe it himself. I like to think I was not responsible for it, but I'm not entirely certain.
Well, they say that if you can come within 20 strokes of your age, once you're over say 60. That you're doing okay, remarkably okay, probably. You know, depending on the course. I never tried it because I saw what it did to my brother, my older brother. He took it up some years ago, and for an activity that's intended to cause you to relax and socialize and have recreation, he had more stress after he did 18 holes of golf than he had before he went on, you know, put on those funny pants and the snappy hat.
Anybody who is not a member of a tour and getting paid to do that, who gets stressed out by a round of golf, you're right. It's probably not the right game for them because golf is a game that is played between your ears. And It's a very zen, it's a very zen thing because the more you think, the worse it's going to be.
Yeah.
So you've got to let go. You got to go walk. You do a whole lot of rice bowl washing. You got to chop wood. You got to carry water. and you know, you just got to be the ball, Betty. Be the ball.
Yeah. I think, wasn't it Will Rogers or one of those pundits who said that golf is something that ruins an otherwise perfectly good walk.
Golf is a good walk ruined. Mark Twain.
Okay, I knew it was one of those wise men from the past. Boy, we could use a few of those wise men today. But getting back to the root of the problem in terms of the healthcare system and doing, I mean, it should seem obvious, except it isn't for those who wish not to see the obvious or the best or the most appropriate, okay?
It's obvious, so I guess, it's obvious, Scott, to anyone whose first concern isn't profit. Is that a fair restatement of what you were getting at?
That's exactly it. Those who are sincerely looking for the obvious, sensible, workable solution, actually looking for a real live, glow-in-the-dark solution, it's there to be seen and discovered and utilized. But I guess that shows us who we're dealing with. They're not looking for solutions. That's, as a matter of fact, that's probably the furthest thing from their mind, or is it the farthest thing?
We can fight that out back behind the bar in the alley later.
but look,
I mean, as we are constantly reminded, Scott, healthcare is 1/6 of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so it's 1/6 of the economy, and there are a certain number of people who look at 1/6 of an arguably capitalist economy and say, what? We're not going to be able to become billionaires manipulating 1/6 of the economy. That's heresy. That's blasphemy. That's evil, wicked. I mean, Granny's got cancer and I can't make a profit off that? That's disgusting.
Well, that's fallacious thinking, because there's no business on earth that can't make a profit the right way. Now, granted, it's not a huge mega profit, but it is nonetheless a profit. I mean, I take radio as a good way of explaining this profit and deregulation fiasco.
Oh, goody, because I never understood how you made money in radio, as is obviously the case.
Well, you would have to see when they did the deregulation and then the Communications Act. I think Telecom Act that Clinton gave us, Clinton and Gore. I think.
Oh, the Telecommunications Act of 1996.
Yeah, and really ushered in the age of Clear Channel and these mega ownerships. You know, 1,200 stations owned by one company. You have to be a blithering idiot not to be able to make a decent living. I mean, if you had a license to run a radio or a TV station once upon a time, if you weren't making a decent amount of money, there was something wrong with you. Now, granted, that's going to vary depending on the market size. But even in a medium market, you know, I knew people that did very well for many, many years. Well, hell, back when all these individual families owned most of the radio and TV stations, they wouldn't have done it had there not been money in it or a good tax write-off. And that was in the days when it was 7, 7, and 7. No single company could own more than 7 AMs, 7 FMs, and 7 TV stations. And they were making a metric ton of money, a lot of them, you know?
They were printing money. Free car wash with Philip down to Roy's Texaco on Fridays.
Yeah. Now, granted, you've got to work a little bit. You've got to sell the time checks and in small markets do the local obituaries. And
sell the weather, and you got your swap meet between the hours of 7 and 9.
Tradio is what we had in Kansas City. One of my dear friends.
The on-air trading post. One of my favorite. You can learn a lot about human nature listening to the trading post.
Oh, yes.
We'll sell or swap for a hide a bed and $35. Call 140-RING-2 and ask for Bob.
Yes. No pets, no guns, and no automobiles, I think, were the prohibitions. But otherwise, if you had it and you thought somebody might want it, call Tradio and get that thing out of where you are and into where it ought to be.
Right. I mean, I've always, like I said, I was trained in the on-air part of the radio business, but not the business end of the radio business. My understanding of the business end of radio is best encapsulated by this.
Just talk into the mic and your voice goes out through the wires. And once a week, whether you need it or not, somebody comes in here and gives you a check for $38.
Yeah, that's about right.
And that's, you know, that's the talent end. The sales end is something I think it involves both thumb screws and a Ouija board. And
well, yeah.
Because see, I mean, you sell the ads for free car wash with Philip down to Freddy's Texaco on Fridays, and you, the salesman, gets 15%, and then your sales manager gets something else, 25%, and the general manager gets 25% until there's no percents left, and you look up and go, how's this place making any money? And you go, wait a minute. This is a beautiful racket. It never makes any money, and everybody's making money. Capitalism.
Well, and the owner takes his cut first, usually.
Right off the top.
I had my first radio station, okay? in 73 was when I started, and I was there about a year, a little less than a year. It was in southern Maryland, like 40 miles, 45 miles outside of D.C. The prime industries back in those days were seafood, like fishing, the fishing industry, and tobacco. Maryland was still growing a fair amount of tobacco, at least that part of Maryland. And they wanted me to go out and sell. Well, I am not a born salesperson. I've done it over the years, but face-to-face sales has never been a strong thing for me. I just don't like it. I don't like it because there's a certain amount of, I don't know, glad handing and manipulation and stuff that it doesn't come naturally to me. And I feel icky. I feel like I have to shower after I've engaged in something like that. But they sent me out to former advertisers. And one of the places was a seafood restaurant. And the owner of the place apparently did well with his ad buy previously on the station, but come to find out, he wasn't paying actual money for his ad purchases. He was trading, like X number of bushel of Maryland hard-shell crabs translated to X number of commercials over the course of a week. Trade is the byword in a lot of small markets. I can think of a number of people who furnished their homes with traded furniture, airtime for a room of furniture, or automobiles, or clothing. You know, get a clothing store to advertise, and instead of paying the station, the GM would be like wearing really snazzy looking 70s pimp clothes or something. I mean, that kind of thing. But mercy. I didn't like that. I was a clown at that station for the remotes.
Oh, there's a lot going on down here today, Bill.
I'll have to send you a picture of Mr. Sunshine. That was the name of the clown. And they sprung for the rental of the costume and the makeup and even the balloons with the station's call letters, but they did not spring for compressed air or helium, you know, which to me made perfect sense. If you're going to hand out balloons, blow them up for the little ones, you know. And I was a smoker back then, and it was not easy in the hot sun and all that makeup and regalia. So I finally, there toward the end, said, "Here, kid, here's your balloon. Let's see how big you can blow it up," you know, because I was about ready to fall over.
Look, Mommy, the clown's... Is that clown's face white or blue?
Goodness. Yeah, I'll have to post a picture of Mr. Sunshine so you can, if nothing else, have a good laugh.
Oh, do please.
But anyway, getting back to the business of health care and insurance, good God. For a time, I sold insurance investment products and mutual funds back in the late 80s. And during the course of training for, you know, to get my license to market this stuff, the instructor was explaining that in the Depression, the Great Depression, a large number of banks went under, but very, very few insurance companies went under. And that's because insurance companies make absolutely sure that they're not going to go out of business because they have all these reserves and, you know, just the nature of that business, they're very cautious, you know?
Yeah.
But there's really no reason that we can't conduct ourselves correctly and appropriately with healthcare in this country.
If we had the will to, Scott.
Oh, I know. I was, if there's no reason we can't, but there are a lot of excuses that some of these people will give to explain why. Oh, we just couldn't possibly do that. And then they go on to explain the founders didn't believe in such a thing. Well, there's a lot of things the founders did believe in, and there's a lot of things the founders didn't believe in. But I recall reading in one of the founding documents that part of the purpose is to form to create our prime obligation is to take care of ourselves. Now, they use different language, but that was the meaning of it. And you probably know chapter and verse, the little phrase that I'm referring to. And I forget whether it was in the Declaration or whether it was in the Constitution. It might have been the Declaration.
Oh, which one?
Well, the emphasis on the fact that the whole point of this exercise, boys and girls, is to take care of ourselves first and foremost. And to make sure that we're here and still around and operating.
Well, actually, the pursuit of happiness, if you are familiar with Dr. Bill's explanation of that seemingly simple and yet terribly complex phrase, the pursuit of happiness is a community good standard. It's not an, oh, hey, look, I've got a brand new Humvee with gold-plated muffler tips.
Mm-hmm.
So, something along those lines?
Yeah, that wasn't the one I was thinking of, but that's a good point. That's along the lines of I'm trying to bring it up on the computer. When I find it, I'll send it to you, and you'll know exactly what it is when you see it. But it's written right there in the document. It's about preserving the well-being. It's about it's not form a more perfect union, because I think that wasn't that Gettysburg address or
no, that's the preamble to the Constitution.
Maybe that's it. Maybe that's part of what I was getting at.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, achieve it. Right.
Domestic tranquility is that in there?
Mm-hmm. Promote the general promote the general welfare.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Yeah, that's the preamble to the Constitution.
Now, it seems to me that there's some value even in the preamble, because it gives you the basis for what the rest of the stuff rely upon and the foundation for all those.
Right, and if you believe in things like promote the general welfare, you go, hey, what about promote the general welfare? I mean, the word welfare is in the Constitution. Jesus isn't, but welfare is.
Yeah.
And that's why fat dead Tony Scalia, while he was still just fat Tony and not fat dead Tony, that's why he had to declare that the preamble to the Constitution has no legal force and effect, that it is mere linguistic window dressing.
No, how could it not have a bearing on what follows it? Because it's the preamble. I'm not a legal scholar.
Beats the hell out of me, Roy, but I mean that's what he said, because you know, remember, he was a constitutional originalist. And the Constitution must be interpreted as it was originally written, except for the parts that he didn't want to originally interpret. Like the part about promote the general welfare and provide for the common defense and achieve domestic tranquility and make a more perfect union. Nah, that's just a load of shilly-shally and horse shit.
Well, you think? Well, it's like Bible thumpers who use the Bible to defend what the Bible says, okay? It's like, well, Mr. Fat Tony, here's the deal. You're confusing Bible thumping with good government. And that's a dangerous thing to get confused, because I would think that both of those are diametrically opposed when it comes right down to it. Because the thumpers, they don't even believe, they believe there's a higher law. You know, their motto is the only good bull is the Bible, you know?
Well, exactly.
And I kind of got just a big fat load of that when I read that book that my brother sent me that Mark Levin wrote, all about the tyrants in black robes or whatever the hell that thing was. And I'll never get that time of my life back.
Unelected activist judges.
But you know, there's a lot of people who have not heard Mark Levin, and so they don't necessarily understand what I mean when I say that he's a guy who has a voice made for print.
Yes.
That's and I mean, and that takes us back to the whole radio thing for just a minute.
Yeah.
Because there are people who are supposed to be in radio, and there are people who are not.
Right.
And one of the lines of demarcation used to be having a pleasant voice.
Yeah.
Hey, good morning, Akron. You know, that kind of thing. Or, you know, or even the guy, hey, good morning. You know, the guy who sounds like he's vomiting when he's talking, but it's still not. And then there's Mark Levin.
Do it again.
Unelected activist black robe judges.
That's exactly what, it's no exaggeration. That is what he, that's how he comes.
Oh, it's unbearable. It is absolutely unbearable. He is unlistenable. And that's before you get to the content.
Well, he is listenable to a lot of people, up to and including my younger brother, who, unless Levin believes it, my brother wants no part of it. And I feel so sorry that someone is that deluded. But, you know, sometimes.
But remember, Levin is the guy who wants an Article 5 constitutional convention.
Yeah.
And anybody who has any fundamental understanding of the Constitution and its creation and ratification knows better than to believe anybody who says,
"Ah, no, what we're gonna do? We're just gonna gavel it in. We got a short little list of things we're gonna fix. We're gonna get a."
It's like listening to Gilbert Goddamn Gottfried, only not funny.
We got to get a balanced budget amendment, and then we're just going to gavel it closed. Trust us.
When, in fact, the history of the last time anything like this happened is that the exact opposite happened. Mr. Speaker! Yeah, Mr. President! And the next thing you know, you've got, and the Articles of Confederation go out the window, and you get the Constitution, and that's exactly what Madison and Hamilton had in mind.
Well, the opposite.
And these fuckers
is...
have that in mind, too. They're going to get in, and they're going to make sure that they take care of the little fetuses, and they're going to make sure that every American has to have a gun, and they're going to make sure that the First Amendment, that they're going to take care of the fake media, the fake news industry, but they're going to leave the First Amendment in place as sort of a skirt behind which the hateful people in the religion industry can hide when they need to.
Yeah, exactly. And the operative phrase here, as we've already learned from what happened previously, they wanted to go to town, and they sure as hell did. And given the opportunity, the Levins of this world will go to town in even a worse way if they get this what is it, Article 5?
Yeah, the Article 5 convention.
Yeah, so let's not do that, boys and girls. At least until cooler heads can.
I mean, you can see the banner rolling with the ominous music from Chicken Noodle News, and live from the Coke Center, it's the Constitutional Convention of the States, brought to you by the fine folks at Coke Industries. Coke Industries have a lot of people who work hard and don't eat babies for breakfast. I mean, Jesus! I mean, you talk about National Petroleum Radio will take anybody's money. That was a this morning thing during morning edition. Morning edition is brought to you by a generous grant from Coke Industries. Employees of Coke Industries do lots of things that don't include eating babies or subverting the political system of an entire country. Like,
well,
God damn, do you people have any standards at all? No, we just want the money.
One of the brothers is a big underwriter of the PBS show Nova, the science program.
Oh no, that's Chuck and Dave, and they underwrite the ballet, and they pay for the helmet with the horns on it for the lady in the opera, and they do all of that so that the people who know which fork to use with the shrimp won't spit on them when they come through the door, because they know what they're doing to our attempt at self-government.
Do you think they're happy with Mr. Trump and his band of merry pranksters?
Chuck and Dave?
Yeah, the Coke folks.
You know, they're not unhappy. I mean, they'd like to be getting a little more of their agenda taken care of.
Yeah, but that's what I mean, since he seems so inept. I mean, you talk about winning.
Well, I mean, but look at how inept was it to repeal the stream buffer zone? Chuck and Dave loved that.
Okay. Now, wait a minute. What's the stream buffer zone?
The stream buffer zone says that coal operations can't dump coal filth in streams.
Okay.
By repealing it, they said yes, they can.
Yeah.
Gutting the EPA. I mean, let's remember the base level business of Chuck and Dave is Earl. Okay.
Yeah.
O-I-L, pronounced all. And so, with that in mind, and they hide their predatory natures behind some sort of libertarian horse shit about liberty and freedom and not needing no government regulation. Because you know what? You know, let's say maybe when you were a kid, your family moved you away from Appalachia. And all your life you've worked and strived, and you think, okay, when I retire, I'm going to move back to Appalachia, and I'm going to hunt, and I'm going to fish, you know, just like I remember Grandpa telling me about. And so you move in there, and you're up a little holler, and it's beautiful, and you hear the turkeys gobbling in the morning. And then one morning, you hear kaboom, and this big-ass cloud of toxic dust comes rolling down on your and you're like, you might have wanted some regulations to keep that from happening. On the other hand, the coal company doesn't want any regulations to keep you from having to breathe coal, toxic blasting dust. Because that interferes with their ability to make a giant capitalist profit off of the suffering of other human beings. Sorry, that was a little bit of a monologue, but you know, that's how it happens sometimes.
No, that's all right. I mean, see, my impression with the Koch brothers is they didn't think much of Trump going in. As a matter of fact, I seem to recall a couple of stories about how they were paying for a lot of advertisements. I don't know that it was anybody but Trump, but it was damn close, during the primaries. I believe the Kochs were responsible for that.
Well, the Kochs were not entirely on the Trump train, but they'll work with anybody. Remember, Pappy Koch made his fortune going over and taking Stalin's dime, okay, ruble. And he only became a virulent anti-communist when Stalin stiffed him. Up till then, he was okay.
What was he helping to
oil.
Deal with the oil?
Oil. Yeah.
There was another father who dealt. Who am I thinking of? I forget. I'll have to research it. But it seems to me Daddy Koch wasn't the only rich daddy that. I know Henry. Didn't Henry Ford open some auto plants in the Soviet Union?
Oh, Henry Ford did lots of odious things like supporting an anti-Semitic newspaper.
Well, I remember
he
that.
He was
yeah.
ass deep in doing business with the Third Reich, you know.
Well, did we solve anything, or did we just get ourselves more upset?
I'm not upset. I always enjoy our conversations. Punky must be napping.
He's happy, Bob. The first couple
Does he
of
like
days,
the new digs?
Well, the better part of a week, I didn't have his little house where it was ultimately going to be, because once it was, I would be able to hang up the little mirror so that when he's up on top, he visits with his little friend, okay, and all is well in Punky's little world. And he is having a nap, you're right. He couldn't have been more chirpy earlier this morning when I first got up. Because there's a lot of morning sun and lots of windows compared to the old place. And, you know, plus with the hardwood floors, there's plenty of echo. So there can be no mistake that there's a bird on the premises when he gets going, you know. But all in all, I think we're doing all right. It's just I called the registrar of voters to make sure to find out how to do a change of address. So I got that handled for the next time we have an election. And I looked to see with the new address if all of my representatives on all levels were going to remain the same. And everybody did, with the exception of my state legislator is someone different, but he's a Democrat, so that shouldn't make any difference. Although I didn't think much of him when he was a city councilman here. But if that's the worst of my problems, then you may as well say I don't have any problems, at least in terms of my representation. But just to put a cap on the whole health care and any other type of conversation related to finances, part of the human condition is there's a built-in mindset that there's never enough. And it shows up worse for more people, especially those people who have more than they could ever possibly spend. They seem to get that virus worse than those of us who just barely scrape by from month to month or week to week. But this never enough thing is insidious, because you could win the lottery for $28 million, and after the euphoria wears off a little bit, at some point, due to your wiring, there's going to be a little voice in your head, well, what happens when all this runs out?
And look, the classic case in point is a hillbilly by the name of Jack Whitaker, nasty bastard. Several years ago, he won right around Christmas time what was at the time the largest Powerball jackpot ever, $374 million.
I remember that. When you said Jack Whitaker, I said, wait a minute, I know that name. But go ahead.
And so they had him on the Today Show, and he stood there and said, and I'm going to give 10% of this to Jesus. And it wasn't a year before there was a story out about how he was carrying briefcases full of $100 bills to strip joints and got rolled for one of them in the parking lot of a strip joint called the Pink Pony down Kanawha Valley Way. The folks in Vegas started coming after him because he was dead beaten on a bunch of debt. And then... You know, he bought a new car for the granddaughter, and she turned up all dead, and her boyfriend hit her in a wood pile out behind the house.
Oh God!
You know, got into pills, got into drugs. You know, this is even before the opioid crisis. And so there is something like that about human nature. The opposite of which is what I call the Depression era mindset, in which. And these stories used to be quite frequent. I'm sure you may remember seeing one here and there about somebody who lived like they were dirt poor. And then when they died and their will was read, they left $10 million to the college library or something like that.
Yeah. Well, you can rest assured, Bob, if I win the Powerball tomorrow night for 200 and some odd million, that I will not be like Jack Whitaker. I will endeavor to do right, because as Mark Twain said, it will gratify some and astonish the rest.
Amen to that.
So there you go.
Yeah.
And I think on that happy note, we will adjourn this portion.
We'll adjourn, and you can go back for looking for a budget Roomba.
Well, I'll get one of those old Raggedy Ann hair type mops. And a can of Endos. That's got to be cheaper.
Well, I was looking there. I found something on. I did. I found something on Amazon called Broomba.
Okay.
Yeah. It's this thing. It's a stick. That's about 5 feet long, and it's got like straw on the end of it. and you can get it with Prime delivery. They'll have it there in 2 days. Broomba.
There it is. I see it on my Amazon feed as we speak.
Yeah, Broomba, yeah. And by the way, just one last little good giggle courtesy of Devin.
Yeah.
The Pink Pony where Jack Whitaker got rolled, It was a strip joint that had been put into a repurposed old KFC place. As Devin says, cue the chicken jokes. Yeah. So you have a good evening, Scott. Good talking to you.
Okay, Bob. Take care.
All right. Later, my friend.
See ya.
Bye now. Our buddy Scott in Sandy Ego. Thank you very kindly to everybody who has jumped in this evening so far. We've got $220 to raise this evening and about 54 minutes to get there. No challenges on the table or anything. Just trying to end the month of July even. So that's where that is. If you want to help out, run over to headonradionetwork.com, click on the tab Contribute, and get it going from there. Let's see, Marty says, but what about Mega Millions tonight? Oh, I don't know, what is it, 172, 100, 200 million, something? Chicken feed. It's, you know, look, the lottery, just understand, the lottery is a voluntary tax upon the unrealistically optimistic. Got it? Just remember that. A voluntary tax on the unrealistically optimistic. Devin just reminded me. As you know, anything in a KFC tastes like chicken, including the Pepsi. Oddly enough, though, in a KFC, you know what doesn't taste like chicken? The chicken. But that's me. Hey, look, it's our buddy the Angry Indian. Hey, Angry. Are you there, my friend? I'm getting echoed back at.
Hello.
There he is.
Yeah.
What's happening? What's up? You go first.
No, what's up? Tell me.
I'm just kind of sitting here watching the country roll through another week of madness, sitting here waiting to see whether or not the Republican Party has the will to move their killing on into an industrial scale. But apart from that, you know, not a lot. How about you?
I don't know. I'm looking at this white Australian woman who got blasted through the fucking car window of the unopened car door of a fucking police squad car that she called because she thought one of her neighbors was being attacked. So can we talk about police brutality now?
Oh, you mean now that it's a white lady?
Well, now that it's a white woman killed by a Somali immigrant cop, are we willing to talk about it
now? Oh, no. We're going to talk about that a lot now. Hey, Angry, I got a bunch of echo coming back at me from your end.
I don't know what from unless I need to call you back.
You can try that real quick if you want to.
Okay, I shall.
All right, stand by. I'll stand by. Yeah, what Angry's talking about is the shooting and killing around midnight this past Saturday of Justine Diamond, originally of Sydney, Australia. And Malcolm Turnbull, the Prime Minister of Australia, is demanding some answers. You know, what kind of answers do you want? Hey, she was killed by police. A lot of people in this country are killed by police. She was killed by police for no good reason. A lot of people in this country are killed by police for no good reason. Because that's the kind of policing system we have. You there, Angry?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, and I'm still echoing, my friend.
Oh, well, I don't know.
Okay, well, I tell you what I'll do. I'll pot you down when I talk, and I'll wait a couple of seconds, and then I'll pot you back up. One, two, three.
Go.
Okay, well, I don't know. What's to say? Yeah, I can hear the echo now myself. I mean, what's to say? She didn't do anything other than call 911 for assistance. And this officer didn't even get out of the vehicle. He just shot her. She was in her sleeping clothes. She was at home relaxing. He just shot her. Charlene Miles, if I got the name correct, up in Seattle, she called the police because she felt that she was in danger. So the police come in and they shoot her. That's the most logical thing to do, right? And, you know, when you look at the Philando Castile case, shot to death. He didn't do anything. You know, they finally released the second dash cam after the case was over, you know, in terms of the officer being acquitted. And he couldn't have been any more polite than he was. But he was, you know, he was a black man carrying a concealed weapon with a permit. So he didn't have a right to his own life. He didn't have a right to freedom. He was supposed to be killed by this officer, who then turned around and pulled the gun on his female partner and the child in the fucking vehicle. But he's cool. There's no problems. But I'm already hearing, you know, whispers on the street that this cop needs to go. White people want this cop to pay. Because this Australian woman was killed. And, you know, I'm upset that this woman was killed. You know, please do not misunderstand me.
No.
It bothers the hell out of me that this thing happened. But at the same time, how come they want justice for her, but for everybody else? Well, you know, these niggas deserve it.
That's the heart of it. But the focus here, Angry, will be, you know, not a look back to Philando Castile, but the fact that the cop was a Muslim and a Somali. And this will feed into the anti-immigrant hysteria of the Trumpanzee white wing.
Yeah, there's no disagreement for me. I mean, that's exactly what's going to happen, because that's what they do. They look for things like this. You know, they look for things like this. And, you know, in a lot of ways, we play into it. I mean, you know, really, you and I, and to a lesser extent, I mean, lately now, Malloy, there's a couple of podcasts out there, maybe a handful of blogs, maybe a few people on Twitter who are pointing out the stupidity of the motherfucking U.S. left in still defending, you know, I mean, what the fuck is this? People are defending Putin personally, like they know him. They're defending the fucking Kremlin because they still think it's a communist goddamn government organization, right? You know, they're like, oh, well, you know, Hillary lost because of her policies. What the fuck are you talking about? She won the goddamn popular vote overwhelmingly. Oh, but, you know, she waged war. Trump didn't. Trump isn't a goddamn politician. He just became one. He wasn't in a position to fucking wage war. Oh, you just make excuses because you believe in the DNC. I'm not a fucking Democrat, neither am I a liberal. Oh, well, you just want to argue then to argue. What the fuck are you talking about? I'm asking you to explain.
Establishment shill.
You know, I mean, goddamn. You know, it's the same thing with all of these black people being killed. A lot of this shit has to do, and I know nobody wants to fucking hear this, but I'm not giving the pound cake speech. I'm saying a lot of it has to do with how we fucking carry ourselves and why the larger society doesn't give a shit. Now, with the last time I remember talking to you on the, when you had the Mike Malloy slot, I said, nigga, and, you know, we had to talk about that for a second because he can't do that on his show.
Well, no, it wasn't that he can't do that. It's just that whatever rules, to the extent there are rules for my program, they happen here, but there are, I don't necessarily transfer everything that happens here into his space.
Yeah, I dig it. And it makes sense. You know, all right, so fine. I dig it. So what I'm trying to make a point is here, when I was, you know, when I made my little minute, you know, retort about, well, we can say it in music, but, you know, we get mad when Bill Maher says it, right? Well, we've had two cases here recently. One, a black, well, I'm saying she's a black Latina, Afro-Latina. A Colombian police officer in New York was recently fired. Now, a police officer, a Latina police officer was recently fired in New York City. It was in, you know, well, I think it was the Daily News from that town. Some video got online of her encouraging her daughter to say nigger, because I guess her ex-husband was black and was also a police officer, and they were having
I saw that.
All right, so you know what I'm talking about. Okay, so her defense is, well, it's normal in the hood, so it's not offensive. Now, I'm going to try to condense this real quick to get to what I'm saying here. This white woman from Australia is being seen as an innocent fucking victim. We never went to war. When I say we, and I'm being very loose with that, because I don't consider myself technically a fucking American. I'm somebody that was stomped on by America, right? Even though all of my fucking family was born and raised here, except for the European that came here. And, you know, and fucking, we're looking at her, because of the semiotics of the situation, as an innocent victim, like you said, of a Somali Muslim immigrant who somehow slipped through the fucking cracks, you know, before Trump became president and you know, became a cop. And is abusing his fucking power and authority.
Well,
by
dig it. Okay, I mean,
woman.
You and I both know the machinations of the right wing world entirely too well, Angry. And let's get something squared up real quick. By day after tomorrow, it will be common knowledge in the white wing crevices and spidery corners of the internet. You know, that website that rhymes with light and fart and. All the other places, in, you know, that the neo-Nazi site, you know, they'll be declaring that the cop in this case shouted Aloha Snack Bar and pledged allegiance to ISIS before he blew away Ms. DeMond. Any argument?
No, that's what I'm getting to.
It won't be factual. It won't even be truthful.
Look, it's hard to condense this shit within a couple of minutes. But when I'm saying this in terms of black folks and in terms of white folks who deal with black folks and who, you know, who care and those who say they care, we really need to motherfucking start checking our language and how this shit is being used to colonialize us. While we're sitting here making excuses for using that bullshit, I've been an Uncle Tom most of my conscious motherfucking life. And it's a fucking serious goddamn thing to sit there with your white girlfriend in the midst of her fucking family. And then there's some fucking buddy coming on TV talking about, yeah, nigga's okay. Nigga's okay. These people sit around and say, well, then fine. Why should I give a fuck about these fuckers? We call them this shit, put them through slavery, put them through all of these goddamn horrors, continue to fuck with them. Don't respect the president for being black. But, you know, they call it themselves niggas. We came up with the shit. And then we wonder why we're getting shot.
Yeah, case in point, pop culture moment. Remember how funny it was in that Jackie Chan movie when he used that word and how everybody in the movie theater just laughed and laughed because it was funny?
But he was Chinese, so it's different, right?
Right. but the thing is, it's always different, okay? And I do want to make one observation about this particular case right now. Hmm. I think there will be a somewhat different response because she's a white lady who got killed by a black cop. An innocent white lady who was
not an opioid user, who was not a prostitute. Right?
No, she was a yoga expert. She was a yoga and meditation expert and a life coach.
That's right.
So, bear in mind. Remember that in the immediate aftermath of the shooting of Philando Castile, the prosecutor and the police department began working overtime to find things with which to slime Philando Castile in social media. I have no doubt whatsoever that same effort is underway with regard to this woman. Okay? And I want to be perfectly clear about this, too. And it's not by way of an explanation. It is not by way of an excuse. But if this cop is charged with a crime, this cop will get off on this charge too. Because in many ways, without regard to race, angry, cops get away with stuff in court because cop.
Because cop.
Are you there?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm here, but I think I missed some of what you just said.
Well, the guy will be charged. If he's charged with a crime, the cop is charged with a crime, he will be acquitted, just like all the other cops are acquitted. That's all I'm saying. It's a legal process thing.
Process thing.
Well, yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, you know, will he be charged? More than likely because of, I mean, the woman did not have a fucking weapon. She posed absolutely no fucking threat, but.
And he got shot.
You know. Yeah, but here's the thing, though. It's still a goddamn black and white motherfucking issue. You know, it's still going to come down to a black and white issue. Because this is one of the things that came up, and again, I'm going to have to go back to New York City because they tend to report on a lot of this shit. You had a an ethnic Chinese officer who was just on the force, I believe. I believe he was a rookie, who shot someone in a stairwell. He and his girlfriend were coming down the stairwell because the lifter wasn't working, and he panicked. You know, supposedly they were looking for somebody else because they're always looking for somebody else, right? And shot him to death. Again, no threat. They were just coming down, a fucking flight of stairs. He calls his union before he calls his supervisor, right?
Sure.
And part of the schism that had happened in the black community all along the fucking East Coast. And there was talk about it when I went to San Francisco a few weeks after that, where they're just like, look, you know, this Chinese officer is being picked on. White cops do this all the time. So, you know, they're going to crucify this Chinese cop because, you know, they wouldn't do a white cop, so it'll get the Chinese one. And they really didn't. I mean, you know, they did ding him for not handling his weapon correctly, for not following procedures, and it didn't look good that he called his union rep first to say, what should I do, before he called his command to say, look, I just fucking accidentally fucking capped somebody. He didn't even try to offer medical assistance to this kid. So, you know, he did not go to jail. He did not get dinged, even though there was a hell of a lot of fucking pressure on him. You know, this is where I agree with you. But then what ends up, you know, happening again. We don't end up having a real rational conversation about a lot of this. It becomes black and white. Just like that shit became Asian versus African, even though that, you know, the people who were trying to support the cop, not trying to get them off necessarily, but trying to point out that they're using us against each other. Because when they first started looking at that case, they were talking about charging that police officer, that Asian police officer with murder. They were going to hit him with the heaviest things. And then they decided, okay, no, we need to defend the motherfucking local police department, so we can't really fucking do this. And that was usually the end, you know, the saving fucking Hail Mary for these guys, which is what you're talking about. But in this particular case, when you got a Trump fucker in there, and then you got his alt-right, little troll army out here, who are not just online, but they're in the streets. I mean, these motherfuckers walk around Portland here with goddamn cosplay costumes on. You know, I saw one fucker here about 3 weeks ago with a sword. You know, so it's like, you know, this is bad. I mean, you know, Trump is still saying that the Central Park Five actually attacked that woman. Again, we're looking at New York City. Again, they were acquitted of this shit. They were found innocent. They know who fucking did it. He confessed to it. These confessions are false, but Trump is still saying that they deserve to get the death penalty for this.
And never paid any kind of a price for it.
Well, no, it's still not paid the price.
Let me clarify one thing, Angry. The reason I say that this cop will walk is something that a minute ago you said, you notice how they were always looking for somebody else. And what flows from that is we made a mistake in good faith. And if you study the constitutional law behind this sort of thing, you will find that there is a good faith exception for just about anything that the police want to do. And so he'll be, you know, well, I was acting in good faith when I shot her in the guts. And he may very well walk. Now, Alma, on the other hand, says, I disagree with you about the Somali cop angry Indians talking about. I think the cop will be crucified. We will see. And we will. But if the guy is not indicted, or if he is indicted and then he gets acquitted, then, you know, maybe we will understand that there are procedural protections that are built into the practice of policing in this country that extend even past issues. And I'm not saying that I'm not, because I got way too much airtime on record talking about the issue of policing and race. But the problem, and I don't want to be taken wrong in saying this, the problem is both broader and deeper. Angry, you said a few minutes ago that we can't we won't have a conversation about this. And what I would say in response to you, Angry, is we are incapable. I mean, fundamentally incapable of that conversation. Not you and me, not this little community congregation. No, but on a national basis, we are incapable of a conversation about police violence because the power of the police is entrenched. The people complaining about the power of the police, it comes from people who are largely powerless. And additionally, they have behind them the vast and awesome power of the law.
And what else? That there's another factor that I've been trying to argue. I hate to do this, but, you know, going home for family events on these holidays where it's like, oh, come on, man, you know, Abby, it's not the 4th of July. You know, we're not doing that shit. Everybody's just off. You know, the same things I'm told doing Thanksgiving, Christmas, all this other crapola. So I made the mistake of going over to Gresham and visiting with some of my family. And one of the things that, you know, we, besides me getting into, you know, these anti-nigger the debates I get into with my relatives and other people of color, one of the things that we got into to the point where somebody, you know, was getting ready to fucking, I mean, I thought we were going to have a physical fucking confrontation. He said that I was insisting that he was stupid when I wasn't. But what I did say to him was, I said, you know, I've known you for fucking like 20 some odd years, man. I've never known you to watch anything that had to actually do with anything. And he goes, what do you mean? Because everybody's trying to figure out what the fuck to watch. And I'm like, look, I'm not into sports, so watch what you want. Oh, man, what you mean? And I said, look, all you watch are cop shows and fucking, you know, soldier movies and war films and shit. I said, you know, you've never been in the fucking military. You never done anything like that, but you live this fake Rambo fucking existence. Oh, man, brother Bob, I at least half of the fucking men took issue with me in the fucking room over that. And one of the things that we're not looking at, I mentioned semiotics earlier. One of the things that we're not looking at is the fucking surrounding narrative in which we're psychologically ensconced in. How many fucking cop shows are on there, on television, on cable, regular, whatever the fuck, right now?
God only knows.
How many movies? How many books? You know, how much? We're saturated with shit that is pro-military, shit that is pro-cop. The cop that has a hard time with his marriage, the cop that has a hard time balancing her kids and her husband who's not a cop and her two murder mysteries and she doesn't know what to do. We're sympathetic and we're all wrapped up in police porn, in war porn, in mercenary porn, right? Oh, no, let me correct myself. Somebody got angry at me a couple of days ago. I shouldn't say mercenary because they're private military contractors. Right. They're private military. This guy used to work for Turner, Brown and Root. They're private military fucking contractors. And he was adamant that I not identify him as a mercenary. That he was a professional military fucking consultant and shit. And, you know, I need to change my attitude because they keep America free. So, you know,
everybody who was listening to this, Shane looked at me and was like, yeah, you know, don't say anything about the military. Don't say anything about the goddamn military. And I was like, that's funny. How many of you motherfuckers served? How many of you motherfuckers have served? And it's like, none of them, Brother Bob. But they're just, you know, engrossed.
Well, you know, we've had times in the past here when my son was considering that. And there are a bunch of veterans in this family community congregation. A bunch. And to a person, their response to Ferg was, don't do it. Don't ask me why. Just take my word for it. Don't do it. And as and you know, he didn't. And as a consequence, but I mean, you know, those are people who serve saying don't have anything to do with it. Because again, we've got a compromised military in this country. That maybe nobody else can say it. I can. I will. We don't have any idea how thoroughly, we know it has been, but we do not know how thoroughly it has been infiltrated by right-wing hate mongers, white supremacists, and that, like, you know, the 3%ers and the Oath Keepers and that type.
Dude, Stars and Stripes said that they're fucking inundated. Stars and Stripes, not me. Stars and Stripes. You know, Military Times, they will occasionally, when they're pushed to try to control the narrative, they'll say, yeah, well, you know, we know that that is going on and we're trying to do something about it. But the Trump administration just cut what little bit of goddamn anti-fascist work the U.S. government engages in. You know, almost everything is directed towards Muslims. And there was a little bit that was directed, you know, pretty strictly towards sovereign citizens, because I read Reason.com. For whatever reason, the New York Times did not publish the entire Homeland Security Department report, but Reason.com did. They got a copy, and they did. And it was talking about sovereign citizens, not neo-Nazis, not white supremacists. It was strictly talking about sovereign citizens, and I understand why, because they present a direct threat to the federal government. You know, the only time that they really give a fuck about white supremacists is when they come after the federal government. Now, you know, I'm in the Pacific Northwest now, and up in Washington State, you had a group called the Order doing the 80s. Remember them?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Bob Matthews and all that shit over on Whidbey Island over there, where they're having the nuclear problems with the Hanford Reservation. Fucking, they did not do a goddamn thing when they were killing you know, poor white drug dealers and a handful of blacks and shit in the Pacific Northwest. But they did start coming after them when they started robbing federal banks. They had killed a number of police officers, but they didn't really do anything until they started going after federal banks. Then they started fucking coming after them, because technically they were going off the script. They're not supposed to attack them. You know, they can cause as much chaos as they want, but they weren't supposed to attack them. And most of the public did not, well, you know, I'm talking about the square public, did not even realize they existed until, what was the name of the DJ? Alan Berg.
Yeah, was it Alan was Berg?
Yeah, by David Lane, right?
Assassinated in Denver.
In Denver, yeah, by David Lane, who passed away like several years ago. This people still alive. But then they rolled them up. But it seemed like they were letting them bowl out of control for fucking, you know, several years. But as long as they were, you know, harming people on the outside. So one of the arguments that I'm trying to make is that they made a smokescreen, at least the way the left read it, you know, people who are not part of the anti-fascist struggle, the way the left read it, well, here's this white supremacist report coming out for Homeland Security, and the Republicans don't want them to release it. Now, yeah, the Republicans did block it, but the report itself didn't even address the real fucking problems. It talked about sovereign citizens, which can be white, which can be black, which can be Native American, which can be La Raza. You understand what I'm saying? You know, anybody that's anti-establishment can basically be lumped into that bullshit. And yeah, there's a lot of Alex Jones fools, and you know, I mean, he's one of the main reasons that people even know about that, you know, running around. But you know, in general, the white supremacist question was never even raised by Homeland Security. So that's a question that, you know, the left, if they're serious, needs to fucking ask instead of defending goddamn Putin, who is actually giving free rein. As the order was giving free rein over here, they're killing homosexuals in Russia all the fucking time. They're killing minorities in Russia all the fucking time. They make it difficult for minorities to be in the Russian subway. And since Putin has come in and has made these connections with the Orthodox Church there, these attacks have gotten worse. Things have gotten worse all around that area. Nobody wants to talk about this. You know, the left would rather, you know, just bash on Clinton all day. And there, you know, it's easy to bash her. Super predator, blah, blah, blah. Bring them to heel. We can do that all goddamn day. But the bottom line was she won the popular fucking vote. So if she won the popular vote, why is Trump in office? That's another question. There are rules to prevent exactly what he and his family are doing. Why is this being allowed to go on? If this was anybody in the Obama administration, they would all be in prison. 6 months in, the public wouldn't have stood for it. The white public would not have stood for it. Congress would not have stood for it. The Senate would not have been quiet. There would be, you know, the dissension and probably mutiny all the way through if a black president tried to do exactly what this cat is doing. They said they wanted to take it back. When you ask them, what do you mean by take it back? Oh, take back our freedom, take back our country. From who? What did you lose? Where did you lose it? Well, this Obama doesn't represent us. So any white man would do. They're using populist motherfuckers to be polite. But he basically said what most of these white people wanted to hear. I want to be able to say nigga and not have to feel bad about it. I want to be able to hate like I used to and not feel bad about it. I want to be able to pat a woman on the ass and not have to fucking apologize for it.
All of which they lump under the broad general heading of political correctness.
Correctness. So, you know, I'm sorry about being long-winded, but, you know, that's, you know, a lot of it has to come to, you know, dealing with white supremacy, dealing with colonialism, dealing with male fucking power, not just white male power, but male power in general. We have to have serious discussions about all of this, but we can't do that if you got a bunch of women voting for Trump. Wearing T-shirts, and I got picture proof of this, talking about Trump can grab my pussy.
Oh, I've seen real live, honest to God, women wearing them.
Yep. And just as much as I complain about black people calling ourselves and identify, I'm not talking about using the word, people misunderstand me. It's the identification. I'm not a black person. I'm not an African. I'm a nigga. That's what I'm talking about. We got an entire generation of folks who are calling themselves niggas and bitches. I'm hearing young women who do not identify as women any longer. They identify as bitches.
I really, really hate that. That's one of those things. And not to say that the other word doesn't get under, because it does. You know, I live in a mostly white population, and I cannot tell you the degree to which I despise it when I hear white kids using that word. And if you say something to me, well, it's spelled differently. It doesn't mean the same thing. But simply referring to females as bitches, and that is common. And if you're mentioning it where you are, and I'm mentioning it, then it probably means it's a national thing, Angry. I despise that with the heat of 1,000 suns.
It is, and that's why I'm bringing it up to you. Because if you've internalized, I'm a nigger. If you've internalized, then I'm a bitch. If you like I said, you don't hear me use redneck on my show, right? Because I know what it is. If you internalize that type of shit, there's a difference between using it within context. There's a difference between using it poetically, what have you. We have a lot of words that we don't use that we should, so that we can actually have context.
Well, you but know, these kids, you know, angry. Then maybe I'm in the wrong here, because I throw hillbilly around pretty liberally. You know, I'm the hillbilly elitist after all. But I use it. Hell, I used it in a meeting last week to try to drive a point home, because that is how the rest of this country sees my region.
Exactly. You and I use these epithets the exact same way. This is what they call us. There's a song, or there was a song, Niggas are scared of revolution. I know you're aware of it. The song ends, we need niggas to die so black people can take over. That was a consciousness that I remember. You know, maybe I'm becoming an old motherfucker. You know, I mean, a couple of these 20-year-olds called me an old man, which really pissed me the fuck off because I don't see myself as old. But I had, you know, I was trying to explain to them where there used to be a consciousness of who the fuck we were historically, as well as as well as our geographical place in the world and how we got here. When you and I talk about the history of Appalachia in terms of mining, in terms of the Scots-Irish, and how these people were abused and taken advantage of and used to be set against
and
Indians
who they abused.
For big business. Yeah. You know, you and I can have these conversations because we have the historical background and we're willing to talk about it. But the resistance comes in from somebody who's been watching cop movies all day and wants to identify with Lethal Weapon or wants to identify with The Shield. Or wants to identify with whatever number of fucking hip police officers you got right now, or some cinema killer who you know, uses, you know, like John Wayne used to do, you know, one bullet, nine Indians fall off their horse all at the same goddamn time. You know, when you try to tell them, hey, man, the way that you're looking at yourself, you're so busy trying to fit yourself into that paradigm, you can't even deal with the fucking reality out here on why what's happening to you is happening to you. Whether you're a black person being fucked over by the police, whether you're someone from Appalachia who's dealing with her third or fourth goddamn, you know, fucking cancer screening in a month, you know, we are put into a psychological framework in which we can't do anything because we believe that we can't goddamn do anything. And one of the ways I can prove this is if you take a lot of fucking people and cut them off from a television for a month, just leave them newspapers and radio. And even then, that's biased. But cut them off from television for a month, they have a completely different fucking perspective after 4 days about every goddamn thing. That's the guarantee. We have this stuff wrapped up in us. I mean, how many times can the press say, oh, well, we didn't know that Trump was going to do this? What the fuck do you mean? You were advertising everything that he was talking about. Every lie. You know, now you're trying to, you know, to play catch up and pretend, oh, yeah, well, we were on top of him from the beginning. But that's not true. Jake Tapper came into this late. You know, all of these fucking reporters came into this shit late. You know, and now I'm watching Max Blumenthal on Fox News criticizing Rachel Maddow for talking about Trump and the Russia goddamn connection, saying that this is a waste of time for the DNC.
Well, you know, let me take a run at that real quick, Angry, because it actually entered into conversation earlier today. There's this assumption that a certain group of alleged progressives, they say things like, well, if the corporate shill establishment DNC tries to run on Russia, they're just going to get beat again because they can't learn their lesson.
Nobody's saying that anybody's going to run an election on this. But goddamn, when you get all the way down to brass tacks, is it not even an issue whether or not the fundamental structure of our system of governance? You know, you'll never catch me on this program using that stupid phrase, our democracy, because it doesn't goddamn exist. But the fundamental essential nature of our structure of governance, does it not matter? Is it not even worth looking into whether or not that was monkeyed with and meddled around with and fucked with? And is it not something to get pissed off about if it was? Because, see, I remember when people on our side, Angry, back in, say, 2000, got real pissed off at the idea that an election was fucking stolen from us. Was stolen from the American people. And then in 2004, lo and behold, they did it goddamn again. And we were incensed about that. And we looked at the 8-year George W. Bush reign of error as an aberration that never should have happened had they not successfully stolen two goddamned elections.
So now it comes along that they that a different group might have gotten a little more sophisticated, and instead of monkeying with the actual ballots, that they monkeyed with the mechanics of the system. Like I've been saying for about a week now, nothing that happened in 2016 could have happened in a world without the predominance of social media. And the fine-grained data analytics that it provides. Couldn't have happened. But, oh, they were pissed off about George Bush stealing two elections, but now the idea that it might have been orchestrated by a state actor with a history of adversarial and outright hostile relationships with us, that we're going to fucking take a powder on? I don't goddamn get it, Angry.
Well, you know I don't fucking get it, because I'm trying to figure out, here you have 2,000, like you just mentioned, to the work of Greg Palast and several other people working basically off his work. You know, we realized that voting while black happened twice in a fucking row. Happened in 2000, and they expanded it in 2004, because when it was found out that it happened, nothing was done about it. The state election committee over there in Florida admitted, whatever the hell her name was, I can't remember her name, she, you know, announced, yeah, well, we know that it happened. We're just going to, put checks in so it doesn't happen again. And they expanded it to several different states and at least two Indian reservations, the second election. So here is my dilemma. Everything that you said plus this. Here you got Black Agenda Report and a couple other radical black left news thought circle, whatever the fucks. They're still harping on, oh, well, you know, they're putting it all on Russia. And I'm like, wait a goddamn minute. Here you are, a black socialist, and you don't have a problem with any motherfucking government fucking with the black vote in the United States. That's a question. That's a fucking question I have for the fucking left, as well as especially the black left.
The Angry, these people, Simon Simple and Simon Pure, And I'm just referring to the so-called real left, which I laugh at. They're still stuck in 1980. They think Big Bad Vladdy Daddy is a commie. They think that you know he's going to bring on the dictatorship of the proletariat or some such shit as that. They're incapable. For some reason, of recognizing that Russia is no longer even a little bit left, that it is as nasty a right-wing state as has existed since 1945.
Yeah, but how many assassinations? Vladimir Litvinenko, you just had this other man died here several months ago in prison. All of them, people who have been on the bad side of Trump, how many journalists have been killed? Poisoned, shot to death, throats cut in Russia. But, you know, these are good guys. But then at the same time, let's look at Iran for a second. I just heard that one of the leading mathematicians in the world, a woman, just passed away. And the current head of state over there, Rouhani, he posted on his Twitter account an image of her without her hijab. Now, people may not think that that's a big deal, but that's about as progressive as you're going to get in Iran, right? And, you know, let's go after Iran. But at the same time, Saudi Arabia is chopping heads. The left can't figure out what it wants to do in this country. You know, the left doesn't know whoever wants to support the Kurds or whoever wants to support Assad. And I'm not kidding about that. Assad is a fascist, right? It's a complicated fucking situation. He's a fascist. And you got anti-fascists that are trying to remove him. But then at the same time, Russia's supporting Assad, right? So you got a lot on the left here that's supporting Assad based on that. Where does communism come into it? It doesn't.
No, nowhere.
Communists kill fascists. You know, that's always been the rule. You know, at every given opportunity, smash them, break their fucking fingers. You know, but put them in such a position that they can't harm any goddamn buddy. That's the communist line if you're going to be a hardcore communist. So it's like, how the fuck can you be a communist and support, you know, and you try to explain this. You can't. Like you said. So then the question to you is, what the fuck do we do? We always end like this. What do we do? Where do we go? How do we handle these conversations? How do we handle these debates? How do we handle these arguments? You know, the left in this country used to be able to fucking debate. We used to be able to do dialect.
No, but angry left, right, whatever. This is a country that can no longer do that. We can't have serious conversations about serious issues anymore, because the level of dialogue has been reduced to, well, you know, I disagree. I think we need universal single payer. And the right wing just says, turd. Turd.
Yeah. Well, you got Benjamin Dixon. I don't know if you know who he is. He's got a video show on YouTube. Yeah. And today I'll send you the link. He says that he's seeing all of these links now where progressives, quote unquote progressives, are saying, well, we need to reach out to the alt-right because, you know, they do have a lot to say. And you know, maybe if we can get, you know, some of the economic inequality out of the way, maybe we can get them to see that we're right. And he's like, you got to be fucking kidding. He's like, you got to be kidding. You really are going to try to fucking convince a neo-Nazi. You're going to convince somebody that supports the Klan. You're going to convince somebody that says, you know, the police need to be able to have carte blanche to kill whoever the fuck they want, that we're going to be able to convince them to be reasonable.
Yeah, and
if that's the mentality of the left, then...
And there's going to be... you're going to run headlong into that problem, Angry. And that is, like, in the healthcare debate, that's what Trump's counting on. That eventually we'll tune up the guitars, and after he kills the Affordable Care Act by withholding subsidy funding, that we'll come around and say, well, okay, let's do something and put Trump's name on it to make him happy. All right, okay. And that we will somehow, that we'll collaborate in that regard. I'm rock solid on no collaboration. The neat thing, however, is that I haven't had to hammer on that too much because, frankly, there has been no risk of the leadership in the House and Senate have kept any collaboration from happening. And history will look fondly upon them for that. Because if you collaborate with fascists, you are no better than the fascist with whom you collaborate.
Did anyone tell Trump that when he was in Saudi the other day?
Yeah, you can't tell him anything.
They're about to chop up. You know, he's going to do the sword dance with them again. Did he hold the orb again when he went this last time?
Was there kissing involved? I'm not sure.
I don't know, but I'm going to tell you something, man. That Brigitte Macron, that what the fuck, man? Because we haven't spoken in a while. What the hell is wrong with Trump, man? First off, he grabs the woman.
His brain is gone, dude. Do you? I mean, I'm sorry, I just duded you.
It's fine,
dude.
But yeah, I mean,
no, his brain's goddamn gone. People think I'm kidding when I talk about the spirochetes. I'm not kidding when I talk about the spirochetes. Something is eating up his brain.
How many times did he not find his limo?
Oh, we're 2, 3, and this isn't the same thing as George Bush trying to walk through the wall at the meeting in China. Everything looked like a doorknob, okay? I mean, it's almost understandable. But Donald J. Trump is not all home. And it really is that simple.
Well, he never thought he'd get elected anyway. This was just a parlay into a show. He never thought this was going to happen. It's Putney Swope all over again.
Yeah, I go back and forth on that. I'm not so sure.
You really think he tried to win? I think he tried.
Well,
to
Well, if he didn't, the people around him did, because Steve fucking Bannon goddamn well wanted his hands on the lever of power, because Steve fucking Bannon has a goddamn agenda, and he is dead set, rock solid, lead pipe cinch, committed to it.
Committed to it.
How come he hasn't been in the news lately?
Yeah, well, he's kind of getting back into it because there's a new book out called Devil's Bargain about him and Trump and what they're call what he what the author calls the storming of the presidency.
Is it really the storming of the presidency? I mean, this is what everybody's been trying to do, that there's been checks and balances, as you mentioned earlier. You got constitutional checks and balances. You know, you have federal checks and balances to prevent exactly what we're watching. So if he's able to do this, it's because somebody wants him to be able to get away with doing this. You know, and I'll say that and I'll also say this, too.
Who's that goddamn billionaire that wound up being the primary funder, who's also the money behind Cambridge Analytics? You know, follow the money.
Oh, you mean it's not George Soros?
Sorry, no.
Because I still didn't get my check from him yet. Did you?
No. I can't even get a card.
I mean, Ms. Angry Indian would really fucking appreciate it, you know, for real. But I haven't been paid by him. You haven't been paid by him. I'm pretty sure he didn't send him a lawyer motherfucking check. So it's like, who is George Soros controlling exactly?
Well, they actually had a meeting, and there's going to be a massive hissy soon over in the Purity Brigade, because the story came out. Sparky shared it with me. Soros and company have decided who they're going to put their money behind. The Hillary people have decided who they're going to put their money behind. And it is, drumroll please, Kamala Harris. And, of course, Kamala Harris is so, so not ideologically pure.
I was going to say.
But I got to get out of here, Angry, because we're right up against it. But before I go, tell people again how they can grab your podcast.
Oh, you can check us out at aboriginalradio.wordpress.com. And, of course, you can find me on Twitter at The Angry Indian. And you'll hear your buddy Bob on there pretty often because we talk pretty often. But, there's a whole lot of, you know, internet radio broadcasts out there that people really need to be checking out if they want some alternative media. And I would really like to ask you guys, if you can, to dig deep and support this one, because I'm not just saying this because Bob's my pal. I'm just saying this because I believe it's one of the best goddamn shows on radio. The only problem is we have a hard time getting other Americans to be able to listen to them. So do what you can. Get the word out that the show is on the air. And if you can support the show, please do. Bob and Agnes would really appreciate it. Peace.
See you, Angry. And it's true. And thank you, Alma, for jumping in. We're going to close the broadcast this evening with a $200 fundraising goal yet remaining. Hopefully that'll come down some with the subscribers over the night, overnight, the overnight crew, or, you know, folks maybe listening to the rerun stream or listening on Podbean or listening via the podcast, any number of ways. We're just trying to finish the month of July okay. So thank you very much to all of you who spend your precious finite time engaging in this conversation in whatever means you so engage. Thank you to all of you. A subset of the previous group. Thank you, all of you who keep the program on the air with your contributions. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks, Sparky. And Man Cave. Oh, my God. The Spacing Guild Master is displaying his powers this evening. Thank you for moderating. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Part of the fundraising we have to do this month is to come up with the funding necessary so I can provide Ben the money needed to keep the White Rose Society open, too. So, you know, that's part of all of this. Bear that in mind as well. And always, 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 thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook, and at Coal River Mountain MTN, at Coal River MTN on Twitter. And yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.